Hey guys, what's up? It's Kia and welcome to episode 4 of Nor and Soul, the podcast. On today's episode, I am actually in the studio solo today and I will be addressing something that I wanted to make sure I touched base on with it being the very last week of Black History Month. Today, we're talking race-related stress. I will be addressing what that means and what that looks like, how it affects people of color, how that shows up in our minds and in our bodies, and what we can do to support each other. I have some literature excerpts to add in. I had a conversation with you guys on social media. So there's a couple of different pieces I want to address today. But with this being my first solo episode, bear with me. But I'm here and I'm excited. So let's get right into it. So I'm going to go ahead and jump right in. And as I mentioned, there's no guest in the studio, so there's nobody to introduce today. But I want to start off with the definition of race-related stress and what exactly that is. So race-related stress can be understood as the chronic physiological and psychological distress on people of color due to racism. And I want to take this little excerpt from an Instagram called Saddy Baddies that address what race-related stress is. And they talked about how race-related stress is very layered, very nuanced, and we have to dive into it from a couple different aspects. So what they mentioned was, consider the combination of structural violence in America coupled with economic and social disparities among people of color. Navigating through this lived-in experience in a country that still has trouble uttering the word reparations is difficult, to say the least. So I actually took that definition and dropped it on my Instagram because I wanted to get some perspective from you guys and just add your voice into this episode, and you know how or if you experience race-related stress. So I asked a couple questions. I did a little bit of a survey, and I want to dive into that right now before I go fully into giving my dissertation on race-related stress and how it shows up on a day-to-day for us. So after giving the definitions, the questions that I asked were, have you personally experienced race-related stress? If so, when and where? So I was with the examples of on the job, in education spaces, in medical office, in personal interactions, so on and so forth. How does your body respond to this type of stress, mentally and physically? Do you actively seek support when it comes to coping with race-related stress? If so, where do you feel the most supported? And if not, why aren't you seeking the support? So after dropping those questions on my Instagram, I got quite a few responses from you guys, and you guys seem to really be into talking about this. So I was really excited that you guys participated the way that you did. So when asked, have you personally experienced race-related stress? Most of you said yes. There was only like 7% of people that said no, they had not experienced that. In regards to where these instances typically show up, most people said at their jobs. I've had other people say like at their schools or in college. I had someone mention on their daily commute, and specifically in New York City, they indicated on their daily commute to work. And also had answers of any time that there are any interactions with police, specifically being pulled over. So work seemed to be the top answer, but I see that, you know, people still also, you know, this shows up in a lot of different spaces. Work is not the only space that this can show up. And there's a lot of different institutions that participate in racism, which I'll get into, that, you know, these instances can show up as well. I asked, how do your body respond to this type of stress mentally and physically? So in terms of mentally, what people were saying was just the feeling of being anxious, frustrated, irritated, mentally drained, and angry. In terms of physically how this shows up for people, most people answered just this feeling of tenseness, just feeling tight and uncomfortable. I had someone say that they literally feel sick to their stomach, like they feel the tenseness that much in their stomach that they feel as if they're sick. I had people say that their body just kind of shuts down and that they just feel drained and tired, which I, listen, sometimes when it comes to things like this, drained is my middle name. So I completely can relate to all of those responses. And like I said, I'll jump into how race-related stress affects our health and you know, what studies say about its effect on us mentally and physically. I asked people, do they tend to actively seek support when it comes to coping with race-related stress? And to my surprise, most people said no, they don't seek support. For the people who did say that they seek support, they said that they feel the most supported amongst their peers, other like family members and loved ones who are people of color that can also relate and understand what it is that they're experiencing. But for the people who said no, and I just want to address two specific responses that stood out to me. One said that it has become so common that sometimes you just forget to address it. And that is very intense because when you think about it, as a person of color, and I want to be clear, just that I'm kind of addressing this in the lens of America. I don't necessarily know how other people of color experience racism on a day-to-day basis in other places, but I know with America, with our with our president that, with y'all president that's in place, because I do not claim that man, with the president that's in place, with the state of the economy, with all the, with constant, what's the word I want to use? With us constantly seeing like race-related issues in media and things like that, just constantly having exposure to racism, this is a lot for us. So I'm kind of just addressing it here because I can personally attest to my experience with racism and how it shows up in America. But I'm not saying that it doesn't exist other places. I want to be clear on that. So to say that it has become so common that we just forget to address it, it's just like we have become so just in a place of like where our concerns and what we're dealing with has been erased and diminished so much that we just learn to like navigate it. And it's not healthy at all. It's not healthy to navigate something that racism isn't going anywhere. Racism is not going anywhere. And so with that said, race-related stress isn't going anywhere. So it's kind of like we start to ignore what it's doing to us because it's just like, we don't really know that we can be supported. We don't really have those spaces to support us in that. Someone else said that they weren't seeking any support because they never knew where to seek help from. And that's another issue that a lot of us face. A lot of us don't have access to the support that we need. A lot of us don't know that this type of support exists. So we're just kind of sitting there dealing with this shit ourselves. And it becomes very unhealthy over time. So first and foremost, I just want to thank everybody that did participate in that conversation. It was a very short survey, and I'll probably do that more often on my social media, just kind of putting out some questions when I know I had a specific topic or episode coming up, and I want to hear some voices outside of my own on, you know, what you guys think about certain things or how you've experienced certain things that I'll be talking about in the future. So thank you for that. Moving on into a little bit more of a dissertation on what race-related stress is and how it's all around us all the time. There's two specific aspects that I want to dive into when it comes to us experiencing race-related stress. And you heard me talk about health within that survey and mental and physical health. So just looking up how race-related stress affects us mentally and physically, there were studies on the fact that race-related stress can cause health problems such as hypertension, heart disease, which disproportionately affects Black women more than any other race, muscle tension, sleep issues, dietary and gastrointestinal complications, and so forth. In terms of mental health, this can affect and lead to anger, anxiety, depression, hopelessness, paranoia, PTSD, resentment, self-doubt, hypervigilance, so on and so forth. And recently, something that I was reading about and looking up, and just to give a little side note, I'm huge on reading. So I am going to be giving some excerpts from a book that I read more towards the end of this episode, when it comes to coping and support and so on and so forth. But I wanted to give an excerpt on some things that I've read, and I might also be doing that more often because I read a lot and there's just so much information that I end up having access to through reading that I want to share with you guys when it comes to trauma in general. But there are studies on what is called epigenetics. And if you're not familiar with epigenetics, let me pull up the definition because I don't want to give like an all over the place definition of what it is. But epigenetics basically is the study of changes in organisms caused by modification of gene expression rather than the alteration of the genetic code itself. So basically what epigenetics is saying is that what we experience, encounter, and consume can make us more susceptible to these health disparities that we mentioned. It's not that epigenetics and racism, or racism as it relates to epigenetics, changes our DNA or, you know, changes the exact coding within our bodies. But what it does do is the constant emotional experiences that come with racism can be a direct cause to particular health problems. So when I say things like racism can affect hypertension and can be a cause of heart disease and muscle tension, it sounds like a reach, but it absolutely is not. And when you think about it, when you're constantly in a space of dealing with racism in these different institutions, when you're coming from when you're coming from Black communities, when you're coming from low-income communities, when you're having a lack of access to the things that you need due to lack of funding, lack of anybody willing to support Black communities, and, you know, high crime rates, and so on and so forth, all of this plays a role in your physical and mental self. Like, it is not as outlandish as it sounds. So I definitely recommend, I'm not going to go into a whole spiel about epigenetics, but I definitely recommend you guys just kind of looking into that and reading some of the studies on epigenetics and how it affects our bodies, but also how it translates to the next generation when it comes to producing and things like that. Because there are also studies that talked about how these changes that happen in our body due to racism as it relates to epigenetics can also become generational. So when we think back to things like slavery, and we think about how slavery happened hundreds of years ago, and you have people trying to erase the fact that you know, the current generation has never been slaves. How are you guys being still affected by slavery hundreds of years later? Read into epigenetics and you'll completely understand. And it makes 100% of sense. Like, it makes quite a lot of sense of how these psychological and physiological changes keep going. If there's no aid, if there's no resources, if there's no, you know, health services addressing this, then it's going to keep going. It's not just going to stop. So that's another thing I want to talk about too, the lack of access and the lack of resources. When it comes to dealing with race-related stress, when it comes to people of color seeking the support or not doing so. And in terms of mental health, I know a lot of times we hear people talk about, I think therapy has been like more of an open conversation these days, which I'm completely into. But I also want to bring awareness to the fact that there are a lot of people who would like to seek therapy, but cannot because they don't have the money to do so. That's another effect of racism. You don't have access to things because you don't have the money. A lot of people of color come from households who are living in poverty, that are living above, below the poverty line. How are they getting access? How are they affording to go sit down with a therapist every week or every so often? Therapy is expensive. I can attest to that because at one point I had started therapy. This is recent. I had started therapy and I probably did it for a couple weeks. And then I was like, "Woo, this is expensive. This is a bill. I can't afford it right now." So I ended up taking myself out of therapy. Would I like to continue therapy? Yes. But if it's not something that I directly have access to at the time, then I just can't do it. And then you also have to think about the people who are working jobs that are not affording them the health insurance that they need, that are not affording them access to mental health services. Like, how can you possibly help yourself if you don't have access to these things? And then all of the lack of funding that goes into communities of color, when it comes to like our children, when it comes to, you know, the younger generation needing to have access to this type of healthcare and this type of these conversations, really, like, it starts at a very young age. So when we think about the fact that kids don't even have access to programs that can address these and bring awareness to these types of things being existent, that's, you know, it's going to continue. It's going to continue. And I'll double back on that a little bit later. But I also want to talk about race-related stress and how it can show up even when you don't think that it may have directly affected you, how it can still show up. So when it comes to race-related stress, you don't necessarily have to directly be the victim of some type of racist interaction. It does not have to be something that happened to you directly. We have access to media 24/7. We have access to social media. We have access to the news. And you constantly, constantly, constantly see headlines of police brutality. You constantly see, high crime rates and deaths and suicides in Black and brown communities. And recently, something that has been showing up in media a lot is like, the effects of racism on children in schools, like kids being expelled or not able to graduate because they have their hair in a certain style or they have locks or whatever the case may be. That's tripping me out, first of all. I'm someone with locks. I've had locks for coming up on 3 years, not quite three, but coming up on 3 years at this point. And when I watch the news and when I look on social media and I see young kids being told, "Oh no, you can't graduate because you have to cut your locks off," first of all, I can't possibly fathom the thought of how someone having hair growing out of their scalp is affecting their learning, affecting anyone else's learning, and affecting anybody in this educational institution. And when I think back on my younger self, pre-college, like, not having really too much information on how racism can directly or was directly affecting me, I'm gonna be honest, I wasn't necessarily having these conversations when I was young. So if I was in a school who was telling me, we're not gonna let you continue your education because your hair is a certain way, I can't even fathom the thought of what type of effect that would have on me. Because what way would I know to respond to that? What way would I feel supported in that? And, you know, you have to, it brings a lot of responsibility for our black and brown educators to kind of step in and say, yo, like, this ain't it. This ain't it. No, this child is not distracting me from teaching because they have a certain hairstyle. Like, there's so many people there. I mean, you got the parents who have to address this with their child just to, you know, make their child not, you know, feel, what's the word I want to use? Just to educate the children and, you know, not allow them to feel bullied by these institutions or not allow them to feel any less than who they are because someone is telling them, you shouldn't have an education because of the way that you appear. So, you know, this is happening. I talked about it on social media with other adults who can kind of more verbalize their experiences, but what about when our kids are experiencing this and they don't have the language, they don't have the education, and they don't have the knowledge to address these things? So, this is quite heavy. This is quite heavy. Just some personal responses to race-related stress that I've experienced and, you know, and conversations that I've had with my peers. I know many people can relate to this. Number one is the distrust in institutions. I am constantly talking about my third eye, right? And how my third eye is always open when it comes to entering certain white spaces or, you know, interacting with certain people. I find myself not, you know, necessarily trusting medical professionals. I read this book, called Medical Apartheid. I'll link it in my show notes because I can't think of who the author is right now. But I read a book called Medical Apartheid, and it just talked about the use of black bodies and experimentation in medical fields for years. And a lot of things that I didn't even know was happening. Things that are damn sure not in our textbooks growing up. I also recommend that book to all of you to read. And that book alone, and, you know, just company with just my other knowledge of how my blackness shows up in these institutions. Trusting medical professionals, trusting white medical professionals for me, ain't it? And, you know, we also talk about when it comes to mental health and physical health, trying to find black and brown doctors is a task. You know, you try to find environments where you do feel like, yes, I can trust this person. And it's a task. It gets hard. It's not something that, you know, it's not something that black and brown people are, it's not a field in which black and brown people are easily accessed. So, those of you who are interested in a medical field, those of you black and brown people specifically that are interested in a medical field, please keep going. Please, please keep creating this space for us to see ourselves in that realm. Just also in, like, when it comes to work and schools, I'm sorry, I don't trust people in my professional life. I've had my experiences in the workplace that have completely just turned my hypervigilance all the way up, and it's exhausting to say the least. But it happens, and it happens for many of us. To be honest, I feel like the more I've become educated, the more stress that it brings. And I, when it comes to anything relating to race, I'm not taking the ignorance is bliss route. You know, if that works for you, cool, have fun with it. But for me, I need to know what's going on. I need to know how this can affect me. I need to know how this can affect my future children. So it is stressful. It's very tiresome, but you got to educate yourself. You got to be aware of where this is showing up and how this can affect you directly. And I also realized that it shows up in the lack of advocacy for oneself. When you don't feel supported because you're in a super white space and you're the only or one of the few people of color in that space, many people tend not to advocate for themselves in the way in which they should, because they just don't feel like it's going to mean anything. I've also had that happen where there were times that I needed to advocate for myself as it relates to race and a personal experience, and I questioned it. I questioned it down to the ground before I took any next steps, because I'm like, is this going to make sense for me to do this? Is this, number one, actually going to be addressed? Is this actually, you know, is it going to turn into me doing something wrong by actually making a point of this specific thing? Like, how is this going to affect me? Because I'm the black person in the situation. So what is this going to look like for me? And a lot of people turn away from advocating for themselves because they don't feel supported in their workspaces. I was just having a conversation actually with my cousin, who mentioned an instance that she witnessed at her job where there was a white woman who touched another black girl in her job's hair and made like a very like derogatory comment. And what ended up happening, my cousin, she felt some type of way about it just from witnessing it. So she addressed it and she brought it to, you know, the higher ups' attention or whatever the case may be. But the girl who actually experienced it was kind of playing a little bit more of a backseat. She didn't really say much about it. She didn't bring it to anyone's attention. And it's probably not that, you know, she didn't feel affected by it or it didn't bother her. It's just like, you have to think about these things sometimes. Like, you have to sit here and think, like, do I want to make a big deal out of it? And, you know, that sounds kind of stupid, because yes, you always should, but how is it going to affect me? Am I gonna, you know, is my job gonna be up in the air because I brought awareness to something that should not be happening in the first place? Or, you know, it's a lot to think about when it comes to being black. It really is. And then just having to deal with white tears and erasure and white dismissal. That's something that happens all the time. White tears are very dangerous. They're very, very dangerous. So when it comes to advocating for yourself and then you have the response of, oh, I didn't know, oh, I didn't mean, so on and so forth, now you look like the bad guy. You look like the angry black woman or male, because you are, you know, bringing awareness to how something is affecting you. But so-and-so goes and cries, and, you know, make it seem like this wasn't something that they meant to do. Or, you know, now you're trying to make them seem like a bad person, that now, you advocating for yourself just doesn't even go anywhere. So it's a lot. It's very heavy. It's a lot to think about. It's a lot of responsibility that we do not need to have as people of color, because it's not our job. It is not our job. And then when it comes to addressing race-related stress, right? Or coping with race-related stress as well. One of the things that white people tend to do is, you know, do this I don't see color thing. And for them, it sounds like, you know, I can't possibly be racist, or I can't possibly be doing the thing that you're saying that I'm doing, because I don't see color and we're all equal. Yeah, no. No, that's not a real thing. Yes, you do absolutely see color. And I want to read a tweet that came from a rapper. Her name is Chica. And her Twitter name, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, is Aronica. And I'll also link that down in my show notes as well. But she said on Twitter, basically, that I'll read it actually word for word. She said on Twitter, white people see color when reporting crimes. White people see color when one person plays into racial stereotypes. White people see color when I walk by their cars and they lock their doors. Y'all have no problem with generalizations. You just don't like how it feels. And that is so true. This I don't see color narrative gotta stop. It has to stop, because when shit hits the fan, you absolutely see my color. When it comes to certain interactions and how me just walking by you makes you feel for whatever reason, you see my color. So she really hit the nail on the head when it came to the tweet that she made, and I read it and I was just like, girl, yes, I'm sick of the I don't see color. I don't think we should be teaching our kids to not see color. Absolutely teach your kids to not see color. I mean, sorry, that's not what I meant. Absolutely teach your kids to see color, sorry. Because their color is going to mean a lot in their upbringing. Their color is going to mean a lot in how they move through the world. Their color is going to mean a lot when it comes to learning, when it comes to being professional, so on and so forth. So please teach them to see color. A lot of parents tend to want to preserve the innocence of their kids so there's not too much conversation about race happening with small children up until something happens. And now we do have to have race-related conversation with our five-year-old because their white friend and their kindergarten told them that my mom said not to play with black kids. Like, you know, like these things actually happen. This is not a reach. This is not me making up stuff as I go. These things actually happen. So we have to be able to teach our kid in whatever kid-friendly way that we can, like cultivate these conversations in our household from the jump. So the kids know what they're getting into when they go out into the world. And I wanna bring into and I want to bring in the book that I was talking about earlier, White Fragility, by a woman named Robin DiAngelo, who happens to be a white woman. And in this book, White Fragility, I recommend this book, number one, to any and everybody, specifically to white people. But I definitely recommend this book to anybody and everybody because it talks about why the subtitle is Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism. And reading this book, Robin addresses a lot, like basically why white people seem to feel so outraged when you call them out on being racist, or why white people try to say some of the things that they say to basically explain that no, they're not participating in white and racism. But if you are white, you are absolutely participating in racism. Do you possibly intend to be a bad person? Possibly intend to be a white supremacist? Not necessarily, but you are participating in racism just by being white. And if you get into this book and get into the content of some of what Robin says, you'll hopefully be able to open your eyes to that idea. But I want to talk about this specific little passage that she said when it comes to white people asking, like, what do I do next? So now, okay, now I understand why I participate in racism. What do I do next? And Robin said, when white people ask me what to do about racism and white fragility, the first thing I ask is, what has enabled you to be a full, educated, professional adult and not know what to do about racism? It is a sincere question. How have we managed not to know when the information is all around us? When people of color have been telling us for years, if we take the question seriously and map out all the ways we have come to not know what to do, we will have our guide before us. So basically what Robin is saying is you have white people still asking in 2020 or whenever this book was written, you have white people still asking, well, what do I do about racism, or what do I do to not participate in racism? And it's like, hello, hey, we've been talking about this for a long time. Where have you been? Where have you been, and why have you gone through your entire life not knowing how to not be racist? That's exactly what she's saying. And I wanted to capture that particular passage because this is what black people have been saying. This is what people of color have been saying. Why do we have to? Why is it a responsibility of ours to explain to you why or you know, why you're racist or what to do so that you're not participating in this system? Like, it's not our responsibility. And that comes with race-related stress. To have to be a person of color that is constantly being asked how, you know, to aid white people in not being racist, that's not my job. It's not my job to teach you how not to be racist. So, yeah, let's do something about that. So, ultimately, I'm going to wrap this up, and I feel like this is going to be an episode that I might have a part two on and may bring some people in to have a conversation a little more in depth around this, but I just wanted to use this episode just as like a little mini episode to bring awareness that race-related stress in fact exists. No, you are not delusional when these things are showing up in your mind and in your body. Yes, people are participating in this. And yes, it's probably showing up in multiple areas of your life. So I just kind of wanted to use this episode just in lieu of this being the very last week of Black History Month. Sorry, I just like drew a blank. But and this being the last week of Black History Month, I wanted to bring this conversation into play and just sit down and talk about this. Going forward, please have these conversations with your friends and your loved ones. Please have these conversations with your children. Keep creating space for us to address these types of things, because it's going to continue to happen, and we need to know what to do and how to identify it. If you do have access to mental health services and things like that, please go ahead and, you know, seek a therapist, sit down with somebody, talk to a professional. But if you're not someone who has access and you want to find out how to gain access to these, places where you can cope with this, I would say starting with your friends and your loved ones is a good place. But, you know, there's different spaces, such as, like, I know there's like a website along with a podcast called Therapy for Black Girls, which is a space that lists all of the Black therapists, like, just throughout different cities in the U.S. If you want to talk to somebody who can absolutely understand what it is that you're speaking about. I know Psychology Today is another place to find, like, therapy services and things like that. But just keep, you know, having these conversations. Keep putting yourself in Black and brown spaces that you can feel supported in, whether it's like just a place to have fun and to kick back and to join and meet other people that look like you and think like you. Just, you know, it's a healthy way to just kind of decompress from all the things that are happening in the world. So I want to thank you guys for tuning into my first solo episode. Hopefully you guys were engaged in this information and it sparked a thought in you and a willingness to just understand how race-related stress affects you and in your body, and just to become more aware of where you can go and how you can seek support in this particular thing. I plan on doing some more solo episodes in the future and possibly doing a part two to this episode and bringing the conversation in a bit. But I just want to thank you guys for joining me, because a solo episode was a little nerve-wracking for me. But we here, so thanks. To learn more about Norin Soul, head over to my website at norinsoul.com. There, you'll have access to all the podcast episodes, and you can learn how you can support me and all my guests, amongst other things. If you would like to share your story and be a future guest, hit the contact page on the site, or you can email me directly at norinsoul@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at norinsoul. And if you like cute things and want to wear my art, head to my shop at etsy.com/shop/norinsoul. I will talk to you guys on the next episode. Bye.